Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Yawning this morning. Yawn stretching this morning. Yeah. Welcome to the original Loretta Brown Show.
I don't wanna. We'll go back to bed, Mom. Come on.
I'm giggling. I can never figure it out. You know, some people are morning people, Benny, you know, some people are not. And I do, when I get up early in the morning, I really, really like it. But man, it is hard to do it sometimes this morning. I was telling Benny, everybody listening, that I don't know, the leaves are turning color and I'm instantly wanting to just stay in bed, right?
It's definitely a seasonal thing. You feel it. It's in the air, the crisp, and it's like kind of like starting to show up a little bit. It just makes you want to like just stay in your warm little cozy bed just a little bit longer. And then you're like, I got to go to work.
Gotta get up.
But I've been doing, you know, mornings for like 20 years, so I'm really excited every day I come in, and I'm so used to it anyways, and still I get, everyone's like, how do you get up so early at 3 o'clock? I'm like, it'd be the same thing that you getting up at 6 o'clock and going to bed at 10. I go to bed a lot earlier than that. But we're here for you, and we love it. Just maybe get that little extra push these next couple of weeks trying to get out of that bed, right? That would help.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pulling out my seasonal lamps. You know, we all have a seasonal depressive disorder here in the Seattle area. Well, okay, not everyone. I know there's people going, I don't. What are you talking about, Loretta?
They're and quick go, to deny, you know. Yeah. They're the first to admit. However you want to look at it.
Yeah. Anyway, it is starting to get beautiful out there. Yeah. Fall is gorgeous in the Pacific Northwest. And it's happening. The squirrels were out in the trees yesterday when I was over at the office, and they're like, oh, someone's in there. What? What is she going to take our nuts?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. We're plumping up here. We're hoarding.
Yeah, we're hoarding. We're getting ready. Anyway, I think I forgot to say it. Anyway, welcome to the original Loretta Brown Show, radio to open the heart, heal the soul, awaken the consciousness. Obviously, I'm the original Loretta Brown. That's how that
the
works.
One and only.
I know.
Did you name the squirrels? Do you have names for them?
Chippy and Squirrel.
I think you just made that up. All right. We'll come back to that one.
Wasn't there Chip and Dale?
Yeah, but they were chipmunks, not squirrels. Totally different. Don't go there.
I'm not going there. I'm going to get in trouble. That's what's going to happen, right? You know? I do have this thing with animals, and quite often when I'm out walking, they will come, especially birds, right? Like crows and ravens. So I see a lot of birds when I'm out and about, and eagles. I was off last week. I was out glamping and
glamping?
Glamping.
Like the real deal glamping? Because, I mean, there's an actual.
Well, it could have been glampier. Oh. More glampy.
All right. For those that don't know, it's glorious, glamorized camping. So you're out in the wilderness, but then you're kind of either in an RV or a camping trailer, and you still have electronics. Those are availabilities. That's the full. Term and form that
I was in a tent.
Oh, so that's not glamping.
I was in a tent, but I had, I felt like I was glamping because I had a blow up air mattress bed that was like a queen size.
Nah, that's
not
normal.
Gonna work.
Nah, that's normal.
That's just camping.
That's just regular camping.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to up my game next time I decided, you know, because it rained and spiders were trying to get in out of the rain. And I don't do that. You know, they have to sleep in the trees or someplace. That's
they need to be, with the squirrels.
With the squirrels.
Yeah, Chippy and Squirrely or whoever.
Anyway, I'm sorry. We're just bantering. I don't know. Sometimes I just want to talk, everyone. So I hope that gave you time to get your coffee or your morning mud water or whatever it is that you guys drink in the morning. I am the owner of Reiki Oasis, located right here in the greater Seattle area for the last 27 years. We've got things coming up. You can find out more about me at ReikiOasis.com. This Saturday, I have the Temple of the Divine Feminine for the women, and we're going to have a beautiful autumn equinox meditation and time together. And then I have Reiki 2 class coming up, Reiki Masterclass. You can find out more about that at my website. I want to check in with astrology because we have so much going on, and I kind of want to tell people just to get ready for astrological weather. I always remind you we're greater than the stars, but they can affect us. So the autumn equinox, of course, is today, which is September 22nd. And it's going to peak, I guess you might say, actually at 6:03 p.m. today, if you want to be specifically on time. We also have six planets in retrograde, and I want to just shout them out very quickly. Pluto retrograde until October 8th, which is going to amplify transformation, and your ability to reinvent yourself. We have Saturn retrograde until October 23rd, which is going to teach us balance between order, discipline, and creative chaos. Neptune retrograde until December 3rd. Neptune helps us transcend our inner focus, right, towards service. And Neptune's kind of a dreamy planet, right? Jupiter retrograde. Jupiter's the big king planet, kind of magnifies everything. Jupiter's retrograde until November 24th, which is going to help us search for meaning and personal truth. We have Uranus retrograde until January 22nd of 2023. And Uranus is the break free freedom planet, trying to help us let go of limitations. And we have Mercury retrograde until October 2nd. And we all know about Mercury retrograde. I posted a funny thing on my Facebook page the other day and where it showed this person with some dollar bills, and they were trying to slip them off to the side of Mercury, and they go, "I'm just trying to bribe Mercury to stop going retrograde, right? Like, stop doing it."
I've been broke all year, so you know how I feel. Completely broke.
Yeah, I do know, and I had a lot of computer problems this week and website problems and things like that. So when the planets are retrograde, I just want to remind people that it's, like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's a retro party. Think about looking backwards, but also remember that you are in now time, so you're not living in the past, but things might come around. They might want you to revisit them. Maybe it's time to clean it up or declutter, do something in a little bit of a different way. So just recognize that sometimes we do have to do that before we can move on. And then we also have Chiron, the wounded healer, retrograde until December 23rd, which is looking at our wounds, our personal wounds. And the greatest wound is the wound of who am I? You know, what's my identity? What am I doing here? So today is the autumn equinox, brings in themes of reflection or reassessment and balance. And it strengthens our receptivity to the spirit world. And under the equinox, the energy of Mother Earth rises, allowing us to align our heartbeat with the heartbeat of our beautiful home planet. So I suggest you spend some time in nature today, and also spend some time with introspection, because the energy of autumn here in the Northern Hemisphere gets us to begin to look inward. We've gone through spring, we've gone through summer, and now we're like getting ready to go into winter, which is not here yet, right? But it is time to be introspective. And so during the equinox, we have equal hours of daylight and nightfall. And we're also stepping into Libra, which is the balancer. So Libra loves this autumn equinox vibe. And as we head into the colder months of the year, it's a reminder to find your equilibrium. Are you off balance? So do a grounding ceremony today if you want to. By the way, anything that reminds you that you're in a body is grounding. And also during Libra, you might need to clear your minds of mental chatter or clutter and take a look at how you've been thinking about yourself. Are you being kind? Are you beating yourself up? What are you doing? So Begin with the self, and then also take a look at your relationships, your partnerships. Try to find a happy medium in any area that feels out of whack. And Libra loves peace, justice, and fairness. So it might help us with any of those Mercury retrograde dramas. And then also during the final hour of the equinox, we've got a very special alignment which takes place between Mercury and the Sun, known as the Mercury Kazemi. And the word Kazemi means in the heart of the Sun. So it refers to when a planet is in a conjunction aspect with our Sun. And this Mercury Kazemi marks a key moment in the current Mercury retrograde cycle. And the fact that it occurs on the brink of a new astrological and meteorological season makes it extra intense. So in ancient astrology, when Mercury was conjunct with the Sun, it believed that Mercury, which is the planet of communication, would whisper messages to the king, and the king is the Sun, delivering secrets or hidden information or wisdom. So pay attention to any of those things coming out either personally for yourself. You might have messages whispered to you about the truth, or in the world around us. And then if that's not enough going on, we have a new moon in Libra coming up in a couple of days in the September 24th. And it's going to try to push us toward peacefulness. But there's like I said, I keep saying this, there's a bit of a rough aspect right now between, are we going to do things in a peaceful, loving way, or are we just kind of blow up? So walk gently with yourselves, everybody. It's a good time to just pause, like I said, recognize the seasons are changing and we are affected by it, and keep yourself in a beautiful spot. So I would like to bring my guest onto the show today, and would like to introduce him. My guest is Mark Matusik. He's a teacher and an award-winning author of 7 books, at least, including When You're Falling, Dive, Lessons in the Art of Living. And drawing on 20 years of experience in using stories, parables, and scientific data, Mark gives the first ever comprehensive look at the mysterious phenomenon of viriditas, the power of drawing passion, beauty, and wisdom from the unlikeliest places. In his book, which is great, you need to just get it and get your tissues handy. Mark interviews hundreds of well-known survivors, such as a Tibetan nun imprisoned by the Chinese at age 11, and the women of Kalama Chili digging for their disappeared. Drawing insight and advice from these heroic individuals, Mark presents a chorus of wisdom on how to survive our own lives and prevail. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks so much,
Loretta. Nice to see you. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you. I'm going to do my best not to cry during this whole interview, because it's tears of grace, right? Tears of grace and mercy, kind of what I think. But I want to let the people know, here's your beautiful book, When You're Falling, Dive. And yeah, I was telling Mark before the show, I cried through the whole book. I'm that girl, and I just do it. So let's talk about what it's about. Mark, I would love for you to kind of introduce yourself a little bit better to the listening audience, and tell us about your own struggles. You know, what brought you to this point?
Oh, well, that's a long story. I'll try to make it as brief as possible. I grew up in a house where there was a lot of confusion and displacement, violence and abandonment, trauma. So I became a seeker at a very young age. I started to look inward for answers about who I was, where I was going, and why there was so much suffering all around me. And that's really what turned me into a writer. And like many writers, I began to write seeking answers, you know, seeking solutions, seeking a way through the confusion and difficulties that I was experiencing myself and that I saw the people I loved experiencing. And that led to a career, a fascination with stories, people's stories, including my own. Yeah. I first became a journalist in New York. I worked in the magazine business. Then I wrote my first memoir in the mid-1990s, which was called Sex, Death, Enlightenment. And I've been a professional writer for 30 plus years. And 15 years ago, I started teaching as well. I teach a method called Writing to Awaken, which comes out of my own deep experience, you know, exploring questions of identity, spirituality, consciousness, suffering. You know, what is it that creates our suffering? And helping people to explore the truth of their lives in order to shift the narratives that control how they live. So that's a very tight little capsule of how I have come to do what I do.
I realize that's a big question. And I also, you know, because you share some of your story in your book, and this idea of writing to awaken, I want to talk more about that. What do you mean? How does that work? Like, I was actually going to not start with that, but I think it's where we need to start.
Yeah. Sure. What I say, Loretta, is that when you tell the truth, your story changes. And when your story changes, your life is transformed. That's the nugget of what I teach. And it starts from the understanding that we don't often tell the whole truth, either to ourselves or to other people. And we move through our lives, you know, living, you know, different levels of fabrication, euphemism, making other people feel good, protecting our reputation. There are many, many reasons why we're not honest. But when we start to tell the whole truth about our thoughts and feelings, it shifts the perspective. It shifts the story that we use to live through. And when that happens, our lives are necessarily transformed. I mean, you are very familiar with the idea of self-created reality. We understand that perspective creates our own world. It creates our own reality. So the work I do helps people to get to the story underneath the story, get to the deeper truth that they don't necessarily express to themselves or other people, in order to free themselves from those materials, those narratives that are manipulating them without their being aware of it.
Wow, I love what you just said. I'm thinking you're absolutely right. I think sometimes people don't even sit still long enough to figure out what their truth is, right? Because they're so busy either going through life, or they're busy going, well, this defines me, this is who I am, blah, blah, blah. And the truth.
And the other piece, important piece, is that we're not talking about the eternal transcendent truth here, the truth with a capital T. That's an unchanging eternal quality of consciousness. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the messy, contradictory, changing human truth of what matters to us on any given day. And that's something that is always changing. And that's why self-inquiry is a practice. It's not like, oh, good, I got the answer now. I don't have to ask those questions anymore. No, in fact, it's an ongoing practice of spiritual and psychological hygiene, you know, to inquire.
Yes, to inquire. You were sharing before the show, you had just done some teachings out on Hollyhock, right? And I also know that you have something called the Seekers Forum. Could you give us some examples of what you're talking about?
Sure, absolutely. Well, yes, I was teaching in Hollyhock, one of my favorite places on Cortez Island, and I was teaching writing as a spiritual practice. The Seekers Forum is a community I started in 2013 because I wanted a place for philosophical dialogue that had nothing to do with tradition or isms or joining groups or obligations, just for people who were free thinking, interested in knowing themselves from a wide variety of different traditions. And so we have a community, it's international, it's theseekersforum.com if folks want to check us out. I have a weekly Writing to Awaken session that I give with the group. That's our core practice. And it is, it's a wonderful place for self-investigation. And in this day and age, at this moment, we need self-inquiry more than ever before. And so the Seekers Forum, I feel, is serving a really important purpose, and I love it. It's just a fabulous community of people from all over the place, age, you know, 25 to 80.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's an online thing. People can join via Zoom or whatever.
Yes, it's an online thing. Go to theseekersforum.com. You can sign up. It's a sliding scale. It's just a sort of a donation thing, and it's a wonderful, wonderful group.
So is this a way then that people can find out the truth? Like they're writing about themselves. Are they writing their memoirs? What are they doing?
Well, no, I mean, of course, there are many people who are writing memoirs. There are people who are, working on different projects. Each month, we work on a different topic related to self-realization. And so the writing that we do during that month would be connected to that. For example, this month, the program is called The Marriage of Sense and Soul, and it's about how science and spirituality interact with one another and how that affects the choices that we make in our personal lives. So the writing we're doing is all about where intuition and reason meet, how empirical are we, how evidence-based are we in our own spiritual practice, how much, where do we fall into magical thinking? There are all kinds of ramifications to this question.
Yes.
So each month's topic is big enough so that it can take us in a lot of different directions in terms of our own self-questioning.
Yeah, I love this self-inquiry thing. Yeah, I'm gonna check it out. That's what I'm gonna do. I wanna pull us back around to your book, the book When You're Falling, Dive. And I want you to just begin with the title. What do you mean? What's the difference between falling and diving? Where does that title come from?
Anyone who's ever jumped off a diving board knows exactly the difference between diving and belly flopping, or just allowing yourself to fall without any surrender, without any grace. So how?
Or yelling on your way down, like Loretta's like,
Yes, you know how much that helps.
Yeah, not.
So the book, I wanted to explore this question of how adversity leads to growth, how post-traumatic growth happens, and the difference between people who flourish after loss and after pain and difficulty, and folks who fall apart. What are the crucial differences? So I interviewed many, many people, and I used my own story also to inform the writing. And the key difference is surrender, the willingness to change, the willingness to meet things as they are. And to realize that we're part of a movement that's bigger than we are. There's a force that's larger than us, that moves through us. And when we dive, we surrender to that force. So it doesn't mean that we don't still make choices. It doesn't mean we have no responsibility for our choices. Of course we do. But beyond a certain point, we cannot control the outcome. And that is the big difference between belly flopping and diving. It's trying to control the outcome and playing God and imagining that we can know the future or what is meant for us. In fact, as someone says, we're guests in this cosmic hotel. We are not the proprietors. And when we forget that, that's when we get into trouble.
Wow, this word surrender. And also, I love this analogy of diving and jumping. I'm imagining, like if you're quote unquote falling, right? Falling from the diving board and you're thrashing around. But when you dive, especially those professional divers, because I love watching those guys that, flip around 85 times and, slide into the water like whatever. But the difference between that, there's a surrender. There's also an acceptance, though,
And there's
right? There's
also,
a,
excuse me, dear.
yeah,
Go
go
ahead.
ahead.
I was
No,
going to say there's also intentionality.
yeah, there you
Yeah,
go.
there's intentionality, there's direction. They're saying, I am going to surrender to what is intended for me. I am going to open to what comes to me. I'm not going to get lost in imagining things to be different than they are. And that kind of focus is actually very calming. It relieves our stress. It brings us to center. It's empowering to have the intention to move with things, to move with things instead of against them.
My goodness, there's so much in that. That idea that we are just guests in the hotel, right? So many people are so wrapped up in controlling or I actually want to touch on what you said of the words magical thinking. Like everybody's like, no, 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 I've got this. I've got this. You know, I created my vision board and this is how it's going to be. And that thing is not on my board. And, you know, so what's magical thinking? What's a better thing than magical thinking?
Mindfulness. Mindfulness pays attention to things as they are. It responds to reality as it is. That's the surrender. That's the cooperation. Magical thinking is an ego trip. You know, magical thinking is a way of manipulating the future. And it's a way of trying to play God. It's as my friend Byron Katie calls it, an argument with reality. You know, it's saying, I will not accept that. I'm going to imagine this is more true. And I'm going to hold on to that despite all evidence to the contrary. And that is truly not helpful. Magical thinking can lose us in fantasy. And while imagination is a beautiful thing, it's only a beautiful thing when we know we're doing it. But a lot of us are lost in imagination without knowing we're lost in our imagination. We're lost. We're using magical thinking or being disempowered by it without knowing that we are. So once you realize, once you face the facts and look at things as they are, facts on the ground, like every spiritual teacher since time immemorial has told us to do, then we can exercise imagination. We can imagine, you know, we can think of alternative possibilities. That's all beautiful. And then we co-create our lives with the forces that are larger than us. That's very different from, this is my vision board. It's not on my vision board. I refuse to accept that this is what's actually happening.
Yeah, I want to explore that more. I think this, we're going to put a station break in here real quick. But my goodness, Mark, I'm letting you talk because the richness of what you're saying is so needed right now. You know, we always talk about how we live in interesting times, like we are in those times. So let's take a station break, everybody. Don't go away. This is Loretta Brown. My guest today, Mark Matusik. We're talking about his book, When You're Falling, Dive. And when we come back, I'm going to ask more questions about this co-creative thing and how do we know if we're just in fantasy, what the difference is once we accept what's in front of us and then what happens after that. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Energy is powerful. It's all around us, mysterious, full of potential. Directing positive, healing energy to raise your vibrational rate through Reiki can change your life. Reiki Master Loretta Brown has relieved stress, sadness, anger, and even helped clients lose weight, stop smoking, and end sleep disorders. Worldwide, people have sought out Reiki Oasis. If you want help with your dis-ease, visit ReikiOasis.com. Harness life's energy. Visit ReikiOasis.com today.
Have something important to say? Want to help improve our world? Need to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Our staff helps broadcasters and podcasters create professional-sounding audio. Bring your talent and let our experts help you craft a radio show or podcast that best delivers your message. Learn more at 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com. KKNW, talk variety that's live and local.
A few years ago, Steve Faircow's lungs were failing.
I don't think I had more than a couple weeks to live.
That's when Steve received a lung transplant made possible by an organ donor. Now Steve can do things he never imagined, like climbing 94 floors to the top of a skyscraper.
I never knew that breathing could feel this good. It's an incredible gift.
What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Alternative Talk 1150, here to uplift your day.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the original Loretta Brown Show with my guest, Mark Matusik. And I am Loretta Brown. I'm the owner of Reiki Oasis. You can find out more about me at ReikiOasis.com. And also, these shows are archived at the KKNW 1150 archives for the original Loretta Brown Show. We're on iTunes, Podcast One, Spotify, Twitter. We're all over the place. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of shows that you can listen to with some really, really of the most amazing people. What a blessed, wonderful job I have to talk to amazing people. Woohoo! Yeah, I like it. So we're talking about When You're Falling, Dive, Lessons in the Art of Living. And before the break, we were talking about magical thinking, falling into fantasy. And you brought out such a good point, Mark, and I want to kind of emphasize it. So once we, like, I think the difficulty is people surrendering or accepting what is there right in front of them. And then once they do that, then there's an entire process that occurs, right? Yeah. I want to read from your book. And what I love is how when I asked, you know, what should I do? And I opened the book. This is what I opened to. And it's in your chapter called The Art of Losing, where you're talking about Viktor Frankl, who was in the concentration camp and wrote the book, The Man's Search for Meaning. And here's a little quote. Fundamentally, therefore, any man can, even under such circumstances, decide what shall become of him, mentally and spiritually. He may retain his human dignity, even in a concentration camp. Dostoevsky said once, there is only one thing that I dread, not to be worthy of my sufferings.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes. I just blows me away. And I want to read the next paragraph, which is your writing. This sounds like an odd aspiration at first, being worthy of bad things that happen to us. Yet our very resistance to being broken by evil is what prevents us from becoming playthings of circumstances. Without this dignity, Frankl suggests, we might as well be animals.
Yes, yes. That's what he said famously, was that the last of the human freedoms is our ability to choose our response regardless of the circumstances we find ourselves in. So barring experiences of extreme affliction and suffering, I'm not being glib about this. When you're on your, you know, if you're undergoing a terrible, you know, surgery, I mean, obviously there are times when pain is beyond the mind's ability to reframe or choice. But the other 99% of the time, we do have power over how we choose, what we choose, and how we wish to respond to our circumstances. When you understand that, you stop being a victim. Yeah. It is the doorway out of victimization. Choice is the doorway out of victimization. What Frankl said was that despair equals suffering minus meaning.
Wow.
That thought was fantastic.
Please go on.
Yes. Well, pain is inevitable, but without meaning, that's when it becomes despair. That's when it leads us to a place of hopelessness and a sense of futility and nihilism that is completely disempowering. It cuts us off from our own spirit. But our unique human ability to create meaning, because of course, meaning is a story. Our ability to create meaning / find meaning is what transforms our experience from being one of victimization and loss and inevitable disaster, you know, to one of learning and growth, and realizing that we are equal to our circumstances. This is so important. One of the primary reasons that people get caught in fear is that they forget that they are actually equal to their circumstances. We have the means with which to meet our obstacles and our challenges, but fear blocks that awareness, and blame blocks that awareness, and bitterness and et cetera, and putting our authority outside of ourselves, all of those things block us from the awareness of the power that we actually have.
Wow. I'm going to listen to this and type it up and stick it on my mirror and look at it all the time. No, you're absolutely right. And I'm also thinking about that, what I said, you know, we live in interesting times. And during the break, you and I were talking about, you know, the last few years in the pandemic, and it's really affected all of us in all of those ways that you just said. So we've been in fear. We've been looking outside ourselves for all kinds of things. People are suffering.
And people are also having fantastic breakthroughs. They are reinventing how they live. Yes. They're rejiggering their values. They are leaving jobs that make them unhappy. They are looking for work that gives them joy. They're moving out of relationships that are stale and perhaps even destructive. People are reinventing themselves in the midst of this this challenge. And both things are happening. So on the one hand, we have the divisions and the polarities and the us versus them and the haves and the have-nots, all of those ugly things, the shadow that the pandemic has brought out. All of that is real. It is also true that to my mind, not since the 1960s have we seen such a rush of interest in consciousness and transformation. And we have to find a way through this. We can't, there's a general knowledge that we can't continue to live the way we've been living, either, you know, as a nationally or in our personal lives. And that's a beautiful thing. But what we do with it is what matters. You know, what do we choose? Do we choose to go down a path of hopelessness, or are we going to look for the possibility? And let's not be, unrealistic. The fact is, many people have used this as a path of self-pity and defeat and blame and aggression. I've seen people whose lives have gotten much smaller because of this adversity. And I've also seen a lot of people who have made changes in their lives that they didn't have the courage to make before, because suddenly they realize, the jig is up, you know, time is of the essence. We really are mortal and we better get on with it.
Yeah. So 1,000% everything you just said. And I'm also so appreciative of flipping that narrative, because that's really what I wanted to do. Like, we are in challenging times. Somebody said to me, well, when have we not been? Well, but there is a collective, massive wave of this, right? Like, everyone that I talk to is saying the same things. And I do believe it is the greatest opportunity. When we step into being a survivor and turning away from victimhood, right? Like, taking back our power. What does that mean? You know, like, these are things we say all the time, but I think this is to the point conversation. And then also, how do we shift that? We're part of it. We're all doing it, right? And my experience, and it's a personal experience, is that when we go through intensity, is what I call great pain, great suffering, great abuse, right, great grief, that there, it's an initiatory path of some kind.
It is if we use it that, absolutely. It is if we use it that way. But that's one of the bases of the book of When You're Falling Dive, is that we have forgotten that adversity is a rite of passage. It's meant to be an initiation. That when we have loss in our lives, it's an opportunity to look for those things that cannot be lost. In other words, our spiritual qualities. There's a design to this. We are intended to awaken, and part of that awakening process is loss and destruction and the promise of death. This is part of why we wake up. If we didn't suffer, we wouldn't become seekers. No one would. They'd be very happy just staring at the flowers and looking at the sky. And God bless the tiny, tiny percentage of people who are really in that blessed state. The fact is, most of us are struggling to find our way to a feeling of wholeness and an awareness of who we truly are. And the thing that prompts us on that journey is adversity. You know, most of us have to be dragged kicking and screaming into spiritual life. You know, we talk about the spiritual path as if it were just this glorious, lovely thing. The spiritual path is full of difficulty. It's full of danger and darkness and dark nights of the soul. And if you expect differently, then you go to a carnival and, you know, play on the rides. real life really makes demands on us in the spiritual life that we may not, you know, be prepared for. You know, the death of the ego is no small thing, but it's also the price of admission to a different way of living.
Yeah, I was only giggling because I was relating to it so deeply what you were saying. This idea that, yeah, the spiritual path is not for the faint of heart.
They say aging is not for sissies. Well, neither is spiritual seeking.
Years ago, I remember my life was falling apart, and someone says, "How are you doing?" And I go, "Great, everything's falling apart. I must be going in the right direction, right?"
Well, that,
right.
I always say that. I say you can look at life as a win-win situation. If you get what you want, fantastic. It's great to get what you want. It's a pleasure. If you don't get what you want, spiritually speaking, it's even better medicine because it forces you to look at where you're caught, where you're clinging, and where you're overly attached. And I just want to say one thing before we go on. I'm not trashing the ego. And that's very common in spiritual circles. We need the ego for a sense of individuality to navigate through the world. When I talk about the death of the ego, I'm talking about the overweening ego, the ego that becomes toxic, that plays God, and that really does need to die before we can begin to surrender to a larger, you know, a larger reality.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, there's so many, like I said, amazing stories in this book. I really recommend people get it and read it. There's a lot of things in this book that I call the things we don't want to look at, right? We don't want to look at the ugly or the painful or the heinous or the whatever. Like, and probably, I mean, you could talk about this better than I could, maybe. It's because we don't want to look at what you were talking about earlier. What is our truth?
That's right. Because the truth is not all pretty. You know, the truth contains things that we don't want to look at. But of course, the shadow, which is what you're talking about, something that we all have to pass through on a path of awakening, contains not only terrible things that we don't want to look at, our fear and our shame and our grief. It also contains our gifts. It contains our power and our originality, our uniqueness, and our courage. And so everyone I spoke to in this book had to pass through their own version of the shadow, their own dark night of the soul, in order to know who they really were. And we spend so much of our lives projecting our shadow outward. Until we reclaim that and say, the thing I hate in you is the thing I hate in myself, until we can get to that very basic, you know, maturing point, nothing really begins to shift because we are essentially in a victim mentality until we say, the enemy is me.
Yeah. You know,
that is part of who I am. The ancients called that metanoia, seeing life from both sides, realizing that you have both aspects of who you are. As Joni Mitchell said, looking at life from both sides now. You know, until we do that, we can't mature as human beings. And we will continue to think that they're wrong and we're right. And if only they would do that, then everything would be okay for us. And nothing changes.
Yes, that is exactly right. Metanoia.
Metanoia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's annoyance and then there's metanoia.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's how my brain works. So in your book, is there any, I don't quite know how to ask this question. Is there any story or any wisdom that stands out for you that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Oh, there are so many. Speaking of magical thinking, the book starts with an interview with Joan Didion, who was a great writer. Most people probably have heard of her. And she wrote a book called The Year of Magical Thinking. And she, after her husband died very suddenly, right in, before her eyes, and she wrote about that year after he died of being caught in this cycle of magical thinking and realizing that it was resistance that was preventing her from grieving and beginning to move forward. But I'd say that, and I interviewed Ram Dass, who was a friend, somebody I collaborated with. The person in the book who stands out for me is always Stanley Kunitz. He was an American poet. He was the poet laureate at one time. And I closed the book with our interview because he is so endlessly inspiring. Now, I met Stanley when he was 100 years old, and he was one of the most vibrant, vital, engaged, interested people I've ever met. And he said, "I don't wake up as a 100-year-old. I wake up as a poet. He said, I meet each day like a bride, like a new bride. And he said to me, reinvention is my philosophy. He also said something wonderful. He said, of course, there are penalties to getting older, but I'm happy to pay them. He had such grace and gratitude about life, such deep determination to live wisely and to bring the values of who he was into not only his poetry, but into how he mentored other writers. Stanley was a fantastic man, and he had been through hell, from losing his father when he was 9 years old to being refused a job at Harvard that he had been offered because he was a Jew. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And he wasn't bitter. He had managed to get to reach 100 years old without being a victim. And to me, that was the sign that this truly is possible. You know, for us to, if we meet our lives creatively, then we don't have to go down that narrowing path of adversity toward the world, you know, seeing the world and seeing life as the enemy. That there is no peace in that. There's no happiness in that. We're part of a larger process that has both shadow and light in it. That's the deal. That's our human condition. Now let's make the most of it. You know, let's really wake up through that process.
Wow. That is well said. And I know that people are listening, and some people are like, yeah, that's right on. And other people are like, what are you talking about? Right? How do I get there? Right?
Moment by moment, Loretta. I mean, really, and to speak to those people for whom this just sounds like Pollyanna.
Yeah.
And there's no denial in this, right? We're talking about facing things as they are, including the hard things, and responding heartfully, responding mindfully, moment by moment by moment. And it's an ongoing practice. So it's not like you wake up one day and you no longer feel like a victim. You challenge your victim thoughts, your victim stories day by day by day as they arise. And whether it's writing that you use or you use some other reflection practice, that's the hygiene. That's why we have to keep doing it, because old habits don't die easily. You know, we've been doing this a long time, thinking of ourselves as the center of the universe. You know, thinking the mind can solve everything and so on. These are old habits, and many of them are reflected in the culture. So when we begin to shift and we have insight, that's where the courage to keep going comes from. And that's the beauty of spiritual practice, is even though you know, enlightenment may seem a long ways away, every step you take on the spiritual path is redeeming. It feels better. You have clarity, and that clarity is what inspires us to keep going, as you know.
Yeah, I do. I was talking to one of my clients yesterday, and interestingly enough, we were sort of talking about this very thing, right? Like you said some great things, like you're equal to the circumstances. You are equal to them, but we feel small, or we shrink in, or we're like, oh, that's looming over me, you know, whatever the deal it is. But also this idea that I can change this storyline. If it's a storyline, like I can rewrite it, I can write myself out of it, right?
Yes. It's true.
Yes.
And it starts with asking ourselves really deep questions. You know, where does it hurt? Where am I caught? What am I believing that isn't true? How am I victimizing myself?
Yeah.
What am I ignoring? These are just fundamental questions that we can use to do this spiritual and psychological, you know, hygiene practice on a daily basis. You know, 15 minutes a day of writing has been shown to have extraordinary psychological and physical benefits. Unbelievable. It accelerates healing. It builds the immune system. It improves relationships. It improves employability. I mean, the research is in. We know that when we bring outside of ourselves what's in there, and we're able to look at it with some objectivity, it shifts our experience. It shifts how we live. And just knowing that is incredibly powerful. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have, it's something that we can do for ourselves. We become our own guides. In fact, what happens, Loretta, is that the witness, that part of ourselves is larger than we are, is the guide. And we tap into that internal guidance through writing and other, you know, forms, you know, meditation, therapy, and so on.
I love it. I'm a journaler. I've been writing for years, and I do what you say. Every morning when I wake up, I'm just like, okay, here we go, right? Yeah. I sometimes go, where was I last night? What did I do while I was sleeping, right? Who knows, right? Thanks for laughing. I spoke
last week with a guy named Andrew Holacek, speaking of dreaming, who is an expert in lucid dreaming. And he knows where he was last night because he was awake in his own dreams. Can you imagine what that's like, to be able to be awake in a dream and then manipulate and change things within the dream? That's an extraordinary idea.
Yeah, I played with that a little bit. And then I realized I needed to stop doing things while I was trying to sleep. Just sleep. So some people it works, right? You know, we've all got our thing. Yes. The other thing I wanted to pull forward, though, is this idea that survivors are more rooted in life, or the way that we're more present.
Yes, yes. I love that. And it's been my experience. It was certainly the experience of everyone I've spoken to, that there's a vitality that comes when your life has been threatened and you've moved through that, that folks who've had more protected lives have a hard time relating to. Self-pity goes, you know, there's a gratitude simply for being here, for having the experience in the first place. Terence Desprez, who was a scholar of the Holocaust, wrote a wonderful book called The Survivor. And he says that survivors are more rooted, deeply rooted in life than the rest of us. He said their will to survive is as stubborn as the upsurge of spring. I think it's so beautiful, that upsurge of spring, that's viriditas, that's that greening power that you mentioned in the intro. Survivors, in order to survive, we have to connect to that power.
Yeah, we do.
And once you're in that power, it's a lot harder to shake yourself off the path.
Well, and there's also this aspect of, and you were talking about it, death is inevitable, right? But we don't have to focus on death. You know, for myself, I'm like, I'm alive right now, right? So even if I'm someplace and I've been delayed, let's say I'm in traffic and I'm sitting for an hour, you know, rather than getting, I sometimes just sit there going, wow, look at how beautiful the sky is. Look at all these people. They all have stories and they're all sitting there, you know, and I'm like, hi, everybody. Hello. Hi.
I love what Eckhart Tolle says. He says, no matter what you're doing, you're either sitting, standing, or lying down. So if you're sitting in traffic or you're sitting, it doesn't really matter. You're always doing one of those three things. So why stress over it?
Yeah, you know, surrender to that, and then also let that bring to you what its gifts are. What final things do you want to share with people? Where can they find you? We've got, a minute and a half or something.
Well, as I said earlier, visit us at theseekersforum.com. It would be wonderful to have you among us. We do this wonderful writing practice every week. And if you're not a writer, just, you know, hang out for the monthly talks and the guest interview. Otherwise, people can come to my website, markmatusik.com, and there's lots of information about upcoming workshops. I'll be at Blue Spirit Costa Rica at the end of February, giving a week-long intensive. And I have online classes, and, you know, I this is my joy. This is what I, when I'm not writing, this is what I love to do. So I welcome people to, come along and say hello.
So if someone comes to you and they say, I can't go on living, I can't. No. What do you say to them?
Well, that's exactly how my book starts. My sister who committed suicide when I was 20, came to me and said, I can't, you know, how do you do it? You know, how do you live? And my whole life has been really dedicated to answering that question. The first thing to do is inquire into the why you believe you can't. If you feel blocked, inquire into the block. What is the block? That's where the answer comes from. And so look at your own resistance. That's always the great place to start.
All right. Thank you so much. My beautiful guest, Mark Matusik, what a blessing. Thank you for being on my show. His book, When You're Falling, A Dive. And this is Loretta Brown. Have a great week. Happy autumn equinox, everybody. Happy new moon. Be good. And we've got this. Yes, we do. Lots of love. Bye now.